says she loves coffee, she just drinks it. She doesn't, I don't like it, I grow it, but maybe, you know, you drink it just. She has some, it's a, I'm not sure if this coffee that she has is a preserve or it's made with a, maybe a special. You wanna take a picture? Why don't you take it now? This is just for your own use or for your pictures. That's generally. I don't like you look at it. It's a mountain of tigers. That's one of the, maybe you think of the little ones, Bruce Lee's do, it's one thing that she has, because it's just coffee needs to be good. So you're in this room, you serve gallons of it. You don't make it in Berkeley, but it's made in one of these kind of special kind of cups, where you just make a cup and a cup. Yeah, I agree, I show it to you. It's what it looks, it's porcelain. It's porcelain, it's a German container. And she uses a Colombian coffee, traditional kind of that. So I recommend the coffee stuff. Tea does not make, as you all know, we Americans do not make tea well. And it's because the people in here, my wife can have to heat it hot first to be sure that usually if you order tea at a restaurant, it's the most horrible mess when they bring in some lukewarm water with a tea bag floating in the greenish way and you're supposed to take it out and squeeze it out. So much about the coffee.
You don't make any midnight drinks on the ice box like for your predecessor.
No. It's not because I don't have a desire. Like most men in public life, I think I don't think this is a problem that women have to the same extent, but you have a problem with how high your cholesterol. Well, I don't think that really makes a lot of difference to that, I mean, as far as whether you're going to have a heart attack or not. That's my professional medical advice. For example, President Eisenhower's cholesterol was very low, and yet he had a heart attack, and then he had some fine. Within proper limits, but on the higher side of limits, but within reason. And so they say don't engage and all that sort of thing. Generally speaking, I follow the doctor's advice strictly on that score. And yeah, I mean, it was all a chance, but nobody did eat there. I don't even say that. Generally speaking, I find clearly, apart from the business about cholesterol, that a very low-fat diet, and apart from weight, a low-fat diet, it keeps you in better mental shape. It doesn't mean every individual is different, but you know, I love pastries, and I love spaghetti, and you know, some of the things we grew up with, spaghetti and pastries, rich desserts and all that sort of thing. My mother was a marvelous pie maker, and before we were married, we were looking for those pies, she baked them, so we still were going through law school and college too. But nevertheless, many years since then, I have desserts only on state occasions. Mm-hmm. And then just a smidge.
Okay. What do you think is the greatest quality of this mixer? What is the thing that strikes you most about it?
You always ask my questions about tough questions, not in the sense of being unfair, but hard to generalize the answer. Probably it's a little something almost like a know, you see her, and see her at the present, and I guess she weighs 100 pounds. When I first met her, she weighed more. I think she used to be used to be on her ass side. She must not be this. I think now she wears a knee to a cat. And when I first met her, she wore a 12 or, and one time even 14. Would that be a lot of
money? Well, dress sizes have gotten bigger. To fire women, they've made the dress sizes smaller than the same size.
Campaigns, which generally can be quite that she still runs a very tight ship. You know, the budget is tight. She is, as a matter of fact, in my view, I think she pulled too hard. It's always the attitude, and part of that is probably the fact that I am not there as much as I would like to be. She is, she's very strict. And I think that's the reason they may have developed some rather strong qualities themselves. But I don't know. Now the test will come. It's Julie, of course, she's not married. I can't seem to know what her plans are. I blew out. Sure. She said, now, Daddy, if I am with you, say, I am going to say it. Don't you tell the ladies in the press. I'll let you try to announce her. In any event, she was, they both will now farm, you know, when you have strains of what you have to go through, sickness. Sometimes even within a minute of death, hard times, losing a job, failing to get a promotion. These are all the things that determine what you value, what you have to do. And these are things that I think it is more difficult for a child who grows up with everything to then face those times that when some things may be denied, than it is for a child that grows up with very little and has to fight. Having said all that, how about all children in this country? Naturally, I don't want to grow up like we did. We want them to have the opportunity not to have to work their way through the schools and all that sort of thing. I think of the hours that I spent working in a library at Duke, when I really could have read some good books.
Mr. Brunel, you were watching reading good books in the library?
I was filing in and working in the library.
You all worked in the library.
I worked in the library. I worked with a librarian, Miss Cullion. She had a great influence on my life. She's dead now. Mary Cullion was her name. And boy, she was harmless. There were only three or four jobs in the library. I had one of them. And you know, you put folks away. I learned all how to work the card catalog indexes and how to fix things up and so forth. Very boring job. And I'm a good librarian.
Well, Mr. President,
I have a librarian over there.
Could you gain more by learning that than you do by reading a good book?
Could be.
Now, your wife has been quoted as saying that you are the convincing parent.
I think that's inevitable. I think that is inevitable. For two reasons. You want to remember I grew up in a family of all boys. And so I remember my father, how really disappointed he was. So my youngest brother, Lord, my youngest brother, Eddie, was quite a boss. You know, when we were born, I was in college, for him. I say, my father was hoping so much that he would be a girl. My mother is not. So when we have only daughters, there's that background. The other point is that I do not have the opportunity. When you do not have the opportunity to do the things with your children that other parents do, you overcompensate. And so when you come home and they say, gee, Daddy, I mean, how about this or that? You say, yes, I am. Now, I must say, I am.
Mr. President, do you think President Nixon, like King Rosalind, do you think the role that you're looking in the White House has changed the all the time?
Let me put it this way. She would never have run for the would never have sought it. Which does not mean that if you use the term white the office, the answer is any lady who is first lady likes being first lady. I don't care what they say. They don't mean
you like being president.
Because, I don't care. See, I thought anybody who aspects of the position more than others. First, she has, as you all know, a great passion for privacy, and so she dislikes the fact that so much of their activities must be public. For example, one of the things that she misses the most is the ability to go to the beach, as she used to do. Just, you know, walk through the kind of California, it's nice that we have that beach we want to go on. Or that she can go, I mean, we used to winter shop. We did even in the years I was out of office in New York, and there we could do it pretty well, although we were recognized by a few. And she likes that. She likes to, you know, the winter shop, to go along. She's somewhat like an Anne Lindbergh. That book made a great, I think, probably catches her as well as anything. But that aspect she doesn't. On the other hand, I think that she likes what you can do in an office. Let me go this way. She doesn't like First Lady because she is First Lady. But she likes First Lady because of what she can do as First Lady, which is a very different thing. Not for the position, but for what the position allows you to do. And one of the things that I think that has come through and all of you have reported very, it seems to me, fairly completely, is her insistence that in that house that all people are treated the same, regardless of their background. For example, we stand in those receiving lines after a church service. We stand in a receiving line after getting to the White House. There are scores of others that she goes over there and shakes hands with hundreds of people, thousands, and for that matter, I guess, with thousands when she has acceptance. And I remember through all of our campaigns, whether it's the receiving line or whether it's going to the fence at the airport, she was the one always insisted on shaking that last hand, not simply because she was leading that vote, but because she simply couldn't turn down that last child or that last person, whatever the case might be. I heard their days, you know, and I say, I feel, I just kind of got, don't have the time to stand any longer. She always insists that anybody that comes in that house, they are to receive absolutely the same treatment. She likes that. She likes, I think she likes very much her activities abroad and at home in the, you know, called volunteer activities. Her trips to Peru and her trips with me, all of it, but those aspects of her trips where she has a separate schedule. As you know, she could go with me and somebody else. Go on his excess baggage and just crap up to the dentist. And she must do that too. But starting on our first trip in 1953, which I wish one of you could have covered, because that was the one where she was pretty short, but pretty aggressive there, on 69 nights. And we had, she only had her dress two. And I wore the same black tie. And I only had one. But nevertheless, for 69 nights, visit hospitals and children's homes and to go through Asia at a time before air conditioning in 1953 was, for her to do that, was an enormous attire to wear for a woman. It was hard enough for a man. But is that part of the job that she does the best? Is that part where she, in my view, where she acts on her own? And I said, if you want to say, I think she personal standpoint, as well as maybe from some other standpoints. First of all, every individual feels that he gets wisdom as he gets older. I'm not sure that he does, but at least he may lose something in terms of stamina and drive and so forth. The other point is that I didn't really have an opportunity, which I would never have had in those 8 years, to see Christian children when they were growing up. If I had been in the White House then, I really never would
have. I think you are.
I never would have.
Is there personalities?
The two girls? Oh, totally.
How? Describe how it's dressed.
Julie is extrovert, warm in her and very outgoing, gregarious. She's always got to be in motion. She's doing something all the time. And Trisha, on the other hand, is introvert. Trisha, it's a very curious combination. Trisha is extremely effective whatever she has to do in public. But she doesn't want to do it in public. She doesn't, in other words, she is not one who enjoys the spotlight. She is not one. I'm not saying that Julie enjoys it either, but I showed in Trisha's case that if she had her brothers, she would prefer not to have had the show on the look at CBS, where she took the tour of the White House or go out on the campaign trips and whatnot. But she does it extremely well, and I think Julie does it extremely well too, so they both have the ability. And that, I think they their training and rest. Mother, they both have the ability to be gracious, and I think dignified and charming as they go out on in their public positions. But one, Trisha preferred a life which was far less than public spotlight. I'm not suggesting Julie likes a life or wants a life of public spotlight, but to Julie, it's not as much of a problem.
Always called her Pat from the time she was born.
And then after her mother dies, then my wife has always known the cat. Now, so actually, while she was born on the eve of a parody of, I would imagine, about the time of the parent journey in 1916, her birthday is celebrated on the 17th. And as far as the name, not tonight, the day, this time, however, we're going to celebrate on the 16th, because you see the Irish are coming over, the Prime Minister, the Irish singers. And so we're kind of in that birthday party. That's why it's a very personal party, and we just invited a few, we could invite all of you to it, a few of you, I guess. I think we have the evening.
What effort do you and Mr. Nixon make to have some private time for just the two of you to yourselves? Are you able to do it?
Yes, we really do. Yeah. For example, when we go to Camp David, I must say, when we go to Camp David, I work a great deal. But we take a bowling. And we go over and do some bowling. And we do some walking together. And when we're in Florida or in California, we walk. I've been trying to get her to take up the golf, because out in California, there is a three holes of golf out there in that place. But she won't, so I don't even, I don't like to play much golf. But in terms of private time together, at Camp David and in Florida, we are very, very strict about not inviting outside people to have dinner and things. It's always people who are sort of family. Like last weekend, we had the Kirk Council of friends from California. We had Roger Johnson sometimes, the Ever Moses sometimes, or Bob Adam. And these are the evenings, of course, but there was more private time than you imagine.
Do you ever consult Mrs. Nixon on any decisions?
Or ever
sound her out?
Yes, she reaches to children.
This will appeal to women's lips, just for the men who might have the fifth.
Biographical sketches. work. Does the leader ask you, like, what would you do about this or that decision? Some do.
That's what we need.
Some do.
No,
I know. You see, and there's where you miss the point. That may not be the most important thing. So the individual says, now I'm going to go home and I'm going to ask my wife, my daughters, for example, what do you do about the next troop control? And so their opinion will be worth your opinion, or their opinion may or may not be yours. On the other hand, their influence can be in areas that don't involve issues. Too many people who write about politics and political men become absorbed with the issues and forget the man, forget the person. What matters is not the program, but the person. Sure, the program matters, I'm getting through on all that, but I mean, if you really want to study, you've got to study the man, you've got to study the person, and in this instance, I think that some of the women, for example, that you back on, take Mrs. DeGaulle. I cannot imagine that General DeGaulle ever discussed, I don't know what the case was, a major decision with Mrs. DeGaulle about whether he should return to the way of the life. But Mrs. DeGaulle had an enormous influence on DeGaulle. It gave him, a sense of security and stability. It's an emotional, chemical, almost mystical relation, which is very important. I look back, for example, on the first ladies that I've been in, this will be interesting to you. Before I ever met a president, I saw a president, I saw first ladies. The first one I saw was Mrs. Roosevelt. I never saw Franklin Roosevelt. And of course, that's before television, so I only heard him on the radio. But when I was in the Pacific, down in the South Pacific, on New Caledonia, Kuwait, from Tuta to Namibia, Tonduta, which is a marine base in Namibia, which is, of course, the capital of the country. One day I was driving a Jeep on long piece of military police, wham, they're off the road. Up the road, Mrs. Roosevelt, riding on the other hand. Who is this? Mrs. Roosevelt, she's out visiting the troops. I had an enormous impression on her, not negative.
Yeah.
Enormous impression. The next one I noticed, oh, sorry, before I met Mrs. Roosevelt, I met Mrs. Hooper. I was the youngest member of the Board of Regents of College. And they put me on the board of your college. And who should be on that board? Lou Henry Hoover, who of course was a Quaker and devoted to the small colleges, to many other good colleges. And I remember what a wonderful person she was. And she had all of the ability to communicate, to be warm, that Mr. Hoover had his heart, but found it so difficult to express. And so I could see how Mrs. Hoover must have been very good for him, as well as a great asset to him in our lives. And then I remember that the next first lady that I saw was Mrs. Truman. And we think of Mrs. Truman these days, it seems so many years ago, it was a lot of years ago, of course. But when I saw Mr. Truman, when we visited and took out the piano up to him, and you've got to describe it. When you see her, you can see why she was very good for him. She's strong. She's there to write down her. She's basically a good, strong character. And I imagine that when Harry Truman is having a hard the past comes, and he'd go home, and I'm sure Mrs. Truman stood there like a rock. dignity and reserve because of his enormous respect for the office. And so many guys in our office, and very fact, called her name as an indication. She was a good balance, right?
Place, then I have to be corrected. See, that's what I mean.
That's important.
visit of Mrs. Kennedy and her two children to the White House was really, it was superb sensitivity, and only a sensitive woman would have handled it that way. I think Mrs. Kennedy was surprised, relieved, and enormously pleased when I wasn't retired in the place, when nothing pleased until Ellen Thomas got it about 8 o'clock. But, no, seriously, but what I meant is here, it was a very difficult thing, you know, for her to come back to that house and for these little youngsters. And you were asking me about the picture, and I was thinking of those two young children. And they having, you know, spent 3 years in that house, and then of course they had to away from that would mean that if they had spent that those years were bad years, because you can talk to Alice Monger. There's another one about the first name. I never call her Alice. She's Mrs. L. And tonight nobody else calls her Alice, and she likes it. Okay. She doesn't like, you know, she's not familiar with it. She doesn't like familiar with it. I always call Mrs. L. Mrs. Monger, Mrs. L. But anyway, Alice Monger, we'll tell you, living in the White House has its points. That we need it for children. But I saw these two youngsters, sensitive, intelligent, and I was so glad that Mrs. Nixon was able to raise their baby to come back and feel very much at home. Feel that, as I told them, that I said, "Lewis, this is your house, and you are always welcome in this house." And Patricia and Julie took them on a little tour upstairs, and they loved having the dogs come in. So that was one thing. That's, I'll let out one here. The one thing that Mrs. Nixon, she's really what in the Navy you call a sundowner. Just use that term without describing it. Sundowner, she's very strict. She's very strict about keeping the place clean. You know what I mean? Believe me, if you still got a copy of the door, she's been on there and on scrubbing. It's like that German mother. And so forth. I mean, she's really, and in the White House, it's the same. She will simply not come in, and that's why she just, my party wants a place to be shape-shaped and look clean and so forth. So, for me to ever get those dogs on that second floor, that was almost impossible. But I heard it from that day. I said to the children, I said, "Oh, so I can see our dogs." I'd love to. So we got three dogs, King and Pasha. And they had the most wonderful time because they love to walk over new carpet, you know. And nothing happens. Very safe.
Is it not comfortable?
Oh, they're all comfortable. No, but you know what I mean? You always say, "But you think this can happen under the house breakers sometimes?" So maybe you got a big dog. Scratch the furniture. And or not
the tail. Just a leg and the tail.
But we got it. Yeah, and the big dog.
The big tail.
He is such a marvelous dog.
But that's the
lovers.
I don't know if you can get those tickets.
But I can say, let me put it this way. It was the first time they were invited with her consent. But the Manoa brings, has brought King back down to Lincoln City Room. He brings him up in private. Brings him down there. Sometimes very late at night, you know, if I'm just, you know, I relax a bit, and I'll the first ladies of this country, the least of the ones of the evening. Mrs. Roosevelt, we'll start with Mrs. Hoover. Mrs. Hoover, Mrs. Roosevelt, Mrs. Truman, Mrs. Eisenhower, Mrs. Johnson, Mrs. Kennedy, were all very strong men, each in different ways, and Mrs. Nixon is in that tradition. Now, by strong men, I mean they had to have character. When you talk about it, I don't want to give the impression to Kennedy to you that the woman's ideas about the issues not matter. I don't discuss issues. What I am saying, though, that you zero in too often on the influence that a woman or a man has on an individual, so that an issue. Sometimes the question is, how's that man going to feel when he alone has got to sit there and make a real tough decision? Does he have around him people who are sanguine, people who are strong, people who aren't panicking, people who aren't throwing up their hands about what they heard the television that night, or the lousy column, or the terrible cartoon, or this or that, or somebody that brings serenity or calmness and strength into the room? That makes a great difference. And this is why, for example, Mrs. Do you ever meet Mrs. DeGaulle?
Yes.
Marvelous woman. Don't you think?
Very smart.
Oh, she was a marvelous woman. Now, Mrs. Johnson was a very strong woman. Anybody's met her. And also, Mrs. Johnson, I think she's strong. I didn't know her well. And I think that her activity is the beautification. Just like, I think my wife will probably be remembered as far as her public activities, more for her travels abroad, and for the volunteer activities, particularly as we have our veterans at dinner a week that I meet. Mrs. Johnson's activities in the beautification thing is a real ideal tendency for some people to beautification, you know, and they do tansies and freeways and all that sort of thing. But it helped. Because the you want to remember that let me go back to this. I just think of the impression of myself. Here I was. I never forgot the time I met Mrs. Hoover, what do you call it? I never forgot the time I saw Mrs. Roosevelt. And I remember the time that I saw Mrs. Truman when we attended the young congressman there. Now, none of these were present. They were first ladies. It wasn't just because they were celebrities. Each of them had certain qualities. Don't underestimate, ever, the enormous impact that the wife of the president, not just because she's the wife of the president, but because of her own character, has in what she does individually. First, she helps the man. She compliments him by sharing him up when he has and all presidents. Each, she said, some have had more problems than others. All presidents have had very great problems. And the wife has to be the stronger partner of the two.
Has to be the stronger partner of the
two? Yes. I think, generally speaking, you will find if you look at three wives, you will notice the interesting, of course, religious skills.
Okay, well, that's a question.
I was going to say that if you look at the wives, naturally you have the Kennedy situation is different for reasons that you're all aware. But you will find wives have always been very, very strong, very, very strong people. When I say the Kennedy situation is different, I don't mean for that, because of his death and life, you didn't have the opportunity to see what would have happened.
Mr. President, on a sort of philosophical level, I don't mean this is a flip question, but if you could express a birthday wish for your wife.
More health.
You go for zero population.
A chance to walk the beach. And I put that in the broadest sense with liked the privacy. He's very interesting, you know. Now, so if I were to express a wish, it would be to any beach. She loves the water, and she loves the water. But the moment that there's a camera there, or somebody watching, or somebody like that, she's overly sensitive to getting in about the fact, well, I've got to shape up. In other words, she feels like we walk the beach, even in California, they didn't know, say, let's go down and take a walk on the beach. She said, well, I can't go look at my face. I said, of course you don't. Well, I need a camera, and there probably is. Mm-hmm. And she's probably right. And she always wants to look nice or look proper when somebody's around.
She does.
But you see, the point is, I think she worries a little too much about that. My view is, well, I'm a little bit proud of myself because, you know, I don't go around in my sports shirts as much as people think I should and so forth and so on. But on the other hand, there is a certain responsibility in this office, both to the man and to the first lady, to maintain the dignity of the office. She does this. But what she'd like to do is to walk along, you know, and say, well, with dark glasses, maybe. Or another thing, you know, or walk to the beach, I'd say also, to go to New York or out on Ocean Boulevard in California and walk along back in the old days, look in the windows, wander into the shops, and just be like anybody.
That I think is the need. And so I would like to see the day
I'm one of those, I guess, rare people who never thought of presidency. Even when I was a conscious former senator. And it was actually a surprise when President Eisenhower did, when I was a senator, selecting his vice president. Tom Dewey was the one who first referred to it when I spoke to the New York State Committee.
No.